Raised in northwest London to St. Lucian parents, Jenny Baptiste's family were always taking photographs. So, when Jenny received her own camera at 10, it made sense that it became even more a part of her everyday life. Little did her mom know, though, that her present to her daughter would spark a curiosity and feed an innovative artistic practice that not long after would be pivotal in shaping the documentation of London's Black British diaspora in the 90s.
I'm proud. Some of the work has really stood the test of time. It's reached multiple age groups and audiences over decades now. Starting out as a photographer, that is something that I always wanted to be able to do.
Rhythm and Roots, Jenny Baptiste's first major solo exhibition, opened at Somerset House in autumn 2025, celebrating a 30-year career across music, fashion, and youth identity. From the vibrating energy of London's dancehall scene to the rise of hip-hop and R&B, it is a vital visual record of a generation finding its feet and leaving its mark. This is The Process, and I'm Laurent John, program producer at Somerset House Studios. In this episode, we go behind the scenes of the exhibition, joining forces with radio producer and DJ Tayo Papula to explore how Jenny Baptiste put the UK on the map as a cultural force to be reckoned with.
As a female photographer, as a Black female photographer, I had to think about how I was going to make an impact. And although I was very young, I was very attuned with how I was going to do things strategically.
As the 90s gave way to a UK street style that looked outwards and internationally, Jenny's photography was instrumental in capturing a new generation looking to define itself. Growing up alongside this creative generation, Tayo asks, what does an authentic portrayal of a creative community look like? And how do you preserve these creative histories for future artists to come? Tayo is joined by a set of creatives and contemporaries to Jenny who were important inspirations in the development of her own practice. DJ Semtex, music director Jake Nava, and British-Nigerian fashion designer Wale Adeyemi.
It's 1993, and the New York rapper Nas is in the UK to promote his generational debut album, Illmatic. For Jenny, as the last photographer of the shoot, the pressure is on to get the picture in limited time.
I didn't necessarily just want your kind of straightforward photograph. I kind of wanted to push the boundaries of creativity with him on that. But in a very simple way, because I was the last photographer, he was tired, and so it had to come from me in that sense, and it did. Originally, I was given an hour, and it was agreed with the label that I was going to take him out in Soho, and I was going to shoot him there. He'd come over to promote Illmatic, and I was like, yeah, I want to get, you know, the streets of Soho in the background. It looked great. Going to shoot black and white. Going to do this. And, you know, it's all in my head what I'm going to do. And then it's like, you're not going to be able to take him out. We've only got the kitchen, yeah? We got the kitchen available in the basement, you know? And I'm like, shit, in my head thinking, what the heck am I going to do here? So anyway, I go down into the kitchen. It's massive, but it's a kitchen. And so I get him sitting on a table. You know, there's a lot here going on in the background. I don't want objects that are identifiable to a kitchen in my photograph. So I need to think on the spot, how am I going to photograph him? And, you know, I'm doing portraits. It's my area, my space. And so I get him sitting on the table so that you don't see that he's sitting on the table. And he brings his knees up and I shoot him and you see him from the side, like he's looking towards the future. And then the floors are really interesting in that space because it's translucent, and so there's lighting coming up from above. So in my head, I'm like, great, because I don't just want a straightforward shot of Nas. You know, I'd seen the visuals for Nas, like The World Is Yours. That video is like one of my favorite videos ever. And during that time, it was just so like out there, you know, it was really innovative for the time period. A music artist, he has these ideas. I know it because you're seeing it in the videos, and music artists, they discuss it all with directors. And so I wanted to be able to do that when I'm photographing him.
And it wasn't a straightforward image. It wasn't in black and white as intended either. Nas does look like he's staring into his soon-to-be glittering future. And the photo of the light coming through that translucent floor does become part of the image, as Jenny sandwiched the negatives together, creating that double exposure effect that's much easier to create in this digital age. Thinking on her feet, creating an image different from the norm, highlighting a cultural movement that was gathering pace. In this instance, hip-hop. Often, the chroniclers of the culture were of the same age and of the same intention as the artists that they were working with, and that led to an understanding of how to cover them authentically.
We were, you know, we were in our 20s, so it was like we were roughly the same age as the artist. So, you know, it's like talking to your friend, basically. It's just that they've got a hit record and you haven't, you know.
I'm interested to hear, not just from Jenny, but fellow hustlers of culture, peers and collaborators from her community across music, video and fashion. Those who are out there with her, shaping the culture as it happened. To frame a picture of and to understand how it found its place on the international scene. You'll hear how hip-hop helped Jenny Baptiste develop her style, but also how music was a driving force behind her artistry, how her upbringing and experience as a young black female photographer from London gave her the opportunity to represent her community with authenticity and truth, pushing away from the stereotypes and two-dimensional images so often served up in print and on screen. Like, for instance, with her portrait of the dancehall queen, Pinky, taken in 2001 at Pinky's home in Brixton.
By that period, I had already tapped into dancehall culture, originally called Ragga, at the early part of the 90s. I decided that I wanted to tap into it again, but I decided I wanted to show a different side of it. And, you know, from talking to her, I mean, we had a wonderful conversation. She told me about herself, the fact that she only wore pink, and it was part of her natural personality, and, you know, we kind of discussed possibilities of where to do the shoot, and she mentioned her home. And so I said yes, because for me, that's, you know, that's your own personal space. She is the embodiment of dancehall in terms of the fashion, in terms of how she dresses, and bringing it into that arena, i.e. her home, will juxtapose any kind of imagery that had been out there already within dancehall culture. It'd be completely different. What I didn't know until the day of the actual shoot itself, I was pleasantly surprised, saw shades of pink everywhere. You know, because that entire home is different shades of pink. And then I was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Don't know what I'm shooting yet, you know, or how the rapport will be, but I was just like, you know, I just need to get the essence of who she is, my backdrop. Is here. Something I think that runs across some of my shoots, whether it's Pinky, whether it's Brixton Boys, bringing them in, photographing them in their natural attire. And it's also displacing the myth of what we look like as people in our community to people who are not part of the community. For me, it's always important to show something that's not been done before. Pinky's a middle-aged woman into dancehall. There's nothing wrong with that. Why don't we show that? It's not a part of mainstream. We don't see it. Or, you know, everything is kind of affiliated to being a young person. But what about the people that come after that? Break the stereotype.
The shoot, which came to be known as Brixton Boys, was very similar. Shot in a reportage style in the sense that Jenny didn't know them beforehand. What stands out for me is the warmth and emotion in the image. Something which shouldn't be exceptional in and of itself. But how often have we seen a shoot of young, black, tattooed males done differently? Shooting an older lady in dance hall, focusing on the camaraderie of those Brixton boys. How do you shoot above and beyond the expectations of an audience or an editor attuned to, quote unquote, the normal way of photographing these subjects?
I got my break within hip hop, within magazines, and it was a very male-dominated space. As a female photographer, as a black female photographer, I had to think about how I was going to make an impact. And although I was very young, I was very attuned with how I was going to do things strategically. I didn't want to just see the typical kind of imagery that I'd seen out there at the time of males, especially within hip hop, which was like, you know, everyone looking really strong and powerful and macho and, you know, arms up and fists and like, because everyone has a different side of their personality.
The shoot with Roots Maneuver, Rodney Smith, is a continuation of these themes, shooting a rapper in his prime once again in a way that was never expected.
Rodney, i.e. Roots Maneuver, I had shot previously twice before I did that photo with the camouflage makeup on. And so I'd already got to know him. I shot him in the early 90s. And then a few years later, I shot him as part of a clothing campaign for Wale.
Hi, my name is Wale Adeyemi, fashion designer. Designer, in fact, creative.
Wale Adeyemi, a British fashion designer whose clothes have been worn by Beyoncé to the Beckhams, Missy Elliott to Miss Dynamite, and loads of people in between. A man who describes his style as from the curb to the boutique. One of the creatives who Jenny Baptiste has worked with and been influenced by.
Roots Maneuver was in his own space. He was someone at that period of time that was just doing something so different that it hadn't been replicated. It was just one of one. I think his art, his craft, his mindset, his whole demeanour, you know, his sound, that's what makes him one of the greats, really, as far as I'm concerned, because it was so distinctive.
My name's Jake Narva, director, and I've been doing it for about 30 years.
Jake Narva, the British director who has made iconic music videos for so many enormous artists from the 1990s onwards. Like Wale, Jake is also featured in Rhythm and Roots as a collaborator, a friend, and an inspiration for Jenny Baptiste.
The photo of Roots Maneuver I love because actually it stands out because it's a bit more stylized. Yeah, it's also got a lot of heart and it feels like she captures something in him. And the thing about Roots Maneuver that was interesting was that he wasn't just trying to be like a commercial rapper. Like he was like kind of art house in his way. And so she captured that in making a kind of art house image of him. So again, it's appropriate that she just delved into that side of herself with him because he was that kind of guy. Like, you wouldn't have done like a low wide angle shot of him because that was not the kind of rapper he was. And so I actually love that picture. It's a great portrait because it reflects the kind of vulnerability or a kind of desire to put yourself out there more on a creative limb that he had. And so it was an appropriate approach to photographing him that is part of what makes it interesting. And it's a cool shot.
It was about doing something that someone, one, hasn't done before, two, that pushes the boundaries of the culture. And then three, I guess, you know, it was groundbreaking at that time because it was like, okay, here I am now. I'm going to ask a black man if I can put makeup on his face. And he was like, Jen, do whatever you need to do. I trust you. It's your creative vision. And that is what I like about you. And I was like, yes.
If you think about the period of time, putting makeup on a dark-skinned male with like almost like a camouflage effect we haven't really seen before. Today, that's just standard. But back then, it was almost groundbreaking, and it's even when you look at the image now, it's still relevant. It hasn't faded. It's going to be one of the greatest images I've seen photography-wise, and especially for Jenny, because every time I look at that, I just think of Jenny. I just think the way it was shot, the pose, the position, the composition, everything was just right.
As they say, art does not happen in a vacuum. And inspiration can come from environment, upbringing, other art forms, and certainly, importantly, other people. To get a really good framework and understanding of the infrastructure of creativity that was around, we need to hear from some of the people who have influenced Jenny along the way, all of whom appear in the exhibition. So, you'll find Wale Adeyemi MBE, director Jake Narva, and DJ Semtex in Jenny's archive and on those walls of Rhythm and Roots. Artists who have developed their discipline during the same time period.
I've just been into the Jenny Baptiste exhibition. I'm a little bit lost for words, actually, because it was quite an emotional journey, looking at all Jenny's amazing work. It was a long time ago we did a lot of that stuff together.
There's lots of people whose work as a creative that I admire, and there are a few people that I have documented, and they're in the exhibition. And I've done that purposefully. This exhibition is a survey of my work. And whilst I'm encompassing, you know, themes like dancehall and hip-hop and fashion, I've also been influenced by people. An example being, I worked with Wale a few times over a decade. And, you know, on one of the shoots, we had some quiet time. And I was like, Wale, I need to take a photograph of you. And he's like, take a photograph. You know, he'd hired me to take a photograph of models wearing his clothes. We had some downtime in between that. And I'm like, I need to photograph you. Like, you are important, you know?
We shot the Inner Docklands and I had this image of like a kind of community in one image. We had musicians, Roots Maneuver, friends. It was just a beautiful thing. And when I look at the image now, it just reminds me of where my head was at that period of time.
I decided that I wanted to bring in some of the people who are what we now deem as influencers. The people that are behind the scenes that nobody knows about, but they do know about, because if you saw their music video, their clothes, their photograph, you'd know them.
It was a beautiful thing to see how we've all grown. What's quite a nice about watching it and looking at the images now, it represents what I was trying to do then, and I'm still trying to do the same thing now. We was almost like expats in a different kind of world. So we all kind of communicated with each other, and we all kind of understood each other and shared knowledge, and we all tried to master our craft together.
My name's DJ Semtex. DJ, producer, record company exec, broadcaster. I do many different things. It's the same thing in the same way that I'm a DJ in a culture doing my thing. Jenny and other photographers are doing the same thing.
Rhythm and Roots is a survey that taps into my archive. And Semtex is a part of that journey. Revolutions at 33 and a Third RPM came out in 1999. He was a part of that.
That exhibition was a series of photos focusing on some of the DJs who had been instrumental in developing the UK's hip-hop scene during the 90s. DJs like Shorty Blitz, DJ 279, The Boogie Bunch, and many more, including, of course, DJ Semtex.
This body of work is now in the Rhythm and Roots exhibition, and it's been remixed in the sense that we now have sound stations that are going to occupy the spaces by each of their photographs. So 9 of the 11 DJs featured in Revolutions at 33 and a Third RPM in Rhythm and the Roots have done mixtapes. It's an opportunity for the audience, my age group, to go back in time. But then it's also a new opportunity for the younger generation, Gen Z, to immerse themselves into something historical.
Rappers document the time. I know history according to what track was out at a certain time. I met my wife in a club, home nightclub in Manchester. The record that was playing was Gangsta Mass Appeal, right? And then we go into the other room where I'm talking, and then it's Boogie Bunch DJing playing the Wu-Tang remix of SWV. Do you see what I'm saying? I know the dates through when certain tracks came out and when they were popping and stuff. So music is that marker, the cultural marker for history. Photographers do the same thing because they capture artists at certain points in time. They could be at the peak of their career. They could be at the end of their career. They could be at the peak of their creativity or the peak of their reinvention. But because the artwork is synonymous with the music, it's just as important.
Back in the 90s, we would go into record shops, you know, put on headphones and listen to an album before you decided to buy it and listen to some tracks. And so, you know, the idea came about, was like, okay, well, if we're going to have the DJs, originally I had one mixtape which featured Semtex and MK from back in the day. And so this time around, it was about, you know, having as many of the DJs as possible. So each DJ has got a specific year or a couple of years where they've tapped into the culture and they've curated a mix of tunes during that time to take the viewer back, basically, to make them feel like they're really in that actual time frame and immerse themselves. It was important that the space for Revolutions at 33 and a Third this time round encompassed those elements as well. So it wasn't a still photograph on a wall just by itself.
There's certain periods in time of rap, hip hop, UK rap, where it's just, there's a momentum. And within that momentum, you have artists, you have DJs, you have photographers, you have writers, and they're all cultural curators in their own right. So Jenny reaches out, can I take a picture? Yep. And that's it. I don't think anything else of it. It's just like, she's cool, she's doing something. Yep. You just do it because great people do great things. And if you see that they're about what they're doing, people gravitate to them.
The kind of photo shoot with Roots Maneuver and the kind of recognition it received happened at the end of the decade in 1999. Similarly, the UK hip-hop scene being celebrated in that Revolutions at 33 and a Third also happened at the end of the 90s, when the UK scene had found its voice and flexed its muscles on radio, in magazines, across clubland, record shops and open mic nights, and of course in fashion. But at the start of the decade, hip-hop culture was very much of the imported variety. The music of Public Enemy had come crashing out of the late 1980s alongside the likes of N.W.A., De La Soul and the Native Tongues. Street soul, as defined by the new jack swing of Teddy Riley, and the second wave of black-directed movies like Do the Right Thing, Menace to Society and Juice were heavily influencing UK style. This was the environment that Jenny Baptiste graduated from college and began her photographic career with a project known as Black Chains of Icon.
It was a time period where there was a lot of consciousness within music as well. So you could listen to lots of different types of music. You weren't just getting, you know, the commercial element of hip hop. You were getting rappers who were conscious, who were talking about civil rights movement. You had Spike Lee that came out with the Malcolm X film. So there was a lot of stuff going around. And, you know, I was absorbing it. I was taking it in. I guess if we're to go kind of political, I've been aware of stuff. You know, I grew up in the apartheid era when, you know, Mandela was in prison and Thatcher was in control and he was deemed as a terrorist, so to speak, and Special AKA made a song called Free Nelson Mandela in 1986 when I would have been about 14 years old and it went in the pop charts. You know, I was absorbing all of that, which is an amalgamation of different areas of politics, arts and creativity and then combining it all together. That's where the idea for Black Chains of Icons came about, because I knew I wanted, one, a powerful and strong name, and then two, I wanted to bridge together the past and the future and where we are right now. And look at that in the sense of, one, identity, colonialism, what identity means, how they inscribed us, and then two, the future, which was back then, 93, 94. You know, you had the fashion accessory of the dog tags, which is kind of moved on from, you know, ID tags and then having that as jewellery. And so I then decided, okay, how am I going to, I want to use some of that within my work. And so I documented some of the people within hip hop culture and then mounted, you know, I used old Lift Developer.
Lift developing is that darkroom process that produces those unique stylized prints, overexposing the paper.
I want to make an image that looks like it was made hundreds of years ago, but I'm doing it right now. And so I thought, you know what, let me experiment. Let me try 2 days old Lift. Let me try 1 day old Lift and let's see what kind of effect I get. And let me try it on a few different types of paper. So I'm sampling, like with music, but I'm sampling with photography, right? With chemicals and with papers. When I get my result, I'm like, okay, this is the paper. This is the technique. This is the process. I'm using 2 days old Lift. This is what I'm going to do. I'm using 3 days old Lift because that aesthetically speaks to me what I want to try and get from that image. And then I'm going to combine it. I'm going to flip it and juxtapose the image so that on the reverse side of the aluminium plate is a quote from a black speaker from history, from the arts, from culture. And I say on the reverse side, the original plates, which I have, which are not shown in the exhibition, have the quotes engraved on the back of the plate. In Rhythm and Roots, we have the quotes linked underneath the image. So you have the images mounted on big aluminium plates, hung by rusty chains. And then underneath the image plates, you have little links of rusty chains linking to the actual quotes themselves, which are engraved on the smaller plate.
How did the UK find its place? How did those 90s creatives find a space for themselves that felt authentic to their own experiences? Hip-hop culture originated from and was led by the US for sure, and of course many of the reference points for black or hip-hop culture came from America. But even though people like Jenny and Wale and Jake and Semtex admired what was happening over there, in music, in fashion, in music videos and in photography, they knew they had something going on over here. And in the 90s, it really felt like the UK was finding its place, leaning on what was happening elsewhere, but remixing it in a UK style and fashion.
Hip-hop, in a way, was sort of just like coming through, and it was really quite specialist. Those of us who were into it had to work quite hard to understand it and to get hold of it and to get access to it. And I was definitely aware, though, that there was something that was our own as well. And there was a sort of twist to that sound or that dance style or that fashion style that was really about where whatever was like learned or admired in America was getting the British flex or the British twist on top of it.
Looking back at my work from the 90s, when I first came out with what I was doing, it was trying to find a space for myself. The streetwear term then was like American streetwear. You know, it was a super like oversized baggy, Fat Farm, Polo, all those types of brands. So, and I wasn't that. So I was almost like, had a kind of UK feel to what I was doing. They didn't quite know where to fit me. I didn't fit here and I didn't fit there. It was a time in my life where I was trying to find myself. It just enabled me to sort of navigate and become who I am. And I used to do that through the clothing. That's how I used to communicate.
That's what I was quite passionate about doing in my early music videos. And certainly the first time I felt like I'd pulled that off properly was in Return of the Mac. Where I was really, you know, definitely setting out to say, all right, look, I know that we're not like where it's at. We're not the home of hip hop, but you know, this is a banging tune. And Mark has got a kind of a bravado about him that, you know, is stepping up to the kind of rap culture of America. And I wanted to make a music video that could sit comfortably next to a Hype Williams video on MTV. Although obviously I had a fraction of the budget, so no one had yet realised that black music in England was that valuable. I remember kids were rapping in American accents to even get a record deal back when it started. But you know, there were a few exceptions, and I remember the first time I went to Public Enemy after that gig, seeing EPMD at the backstage party getting battled by Hijack. And I don't know where Hijack are now, but they had some grime drill attitude to them, and they had English accents, and they came in to show that they had flavour, and there was a kind of a frustration and an underdog push which continued into grime. It felt like Hijack were a sort of forefather of that in a way, and that night they went crazy.
The UK style has always been very European, so we were wearing, in streetwear terms, chippy jeans, Chevron, Burlington socks, Air Maxes, that was the whole kind of UK, barber jackets, Moschino, all that type of thing. So it was very different to the US. I always knew that that wasn't fully what I felt passionate about. I felt very passionate about UK scene and what we were doing and style. That's what I could relate to. Street style, I'll say it again, somewhere between the curb and the boutique. That's what it is.
A whole bunch of people who were into a relatively underground scene and had to work quite hard to be part of it. I don't know that we could have really imagined that it would have become so important in popular culture across the globe. I don't know that we would have imagined that kids in America be getting into jungle and drum and bass and stuff like that. We always just felt a little bit like the ugly little sister, I think. And so it is rewarding to see that some of the things that Britain's had to offer to the picture have really taken flight. In England, it was kind of cool to be quite like ID down there on the curb and celebrating the subculture stuff that had been crafted by people who maybe just didn't have all the tools at their disposal, but had to be like DIY culture. Make it for yourself. Be able to build your own speakers, or, you know, Wale was literally cutting his own garms. And I'm pretty sure that Jenny would have been like processing and printing her own stuff. There was a kind of creative energy that came with that. A celebration also of street culture and of a kind of more unique flavour. And that was part of what separated us in England. We were sort of making it up for ourselves a bit more and being actually in contrast to what seemed mainstream. Whereas a lot of the time what was happening in America seemed to be people really gravitating to the gloss and the big bucks and the mainstream.
I think the most apparent thing for me when going around the exhibition was, for us then, that was collaborating. Jenny was a photographer, I was a designer, musicians were doing their thing. We'd all come together as a unit to say, let's do something. And it wasn't really a business transaction, it was like a hobby. especially for myself, and I'm sure it was the same for Jenny and some of the other artists, it wasn't really about a monetary value of anything. It was just about how can we all use our resources and our talent to come together as a unit to create something and to put art together and express our art. So yeah, it was really good to see. It was almost like expats in a different kind of world. So we all kind of communicated with each other and we all kind of understood each other and shared knowledge. And we all tried to master our craft together. That was the feeling of how it was back then for myself.
I think we're very blessed to be in the positions that we're in, as whether it's DJ, whether it's a photographer, we get to document the culture, and what we do must be listened to. It must be viewed. It must be heard. It must be in every prestigious place. It must live on. It's timeless. And what Jenny's doing is just testament to that.
Obviously, I know Jenny. She took a photo of me. When I came to the show, I was kind of like moved because I felt like, yeah, this is such a powerful moment for her. And everybody's vibing off it because, you know, the kids are into that kind of style moment again, the youngers, because she presented it so beautifully and she celebrated sort of celluloid culture with that use of that kind of like contact sheet aesthetic. And she also had that playground ball court vibe with the chain link fence. And it was just all presented in a really nice way and literally was like the curb inside the boutique. You know, here we are in this really grand building and we just got like her work getting the comeuppance that it deserves, because she's been at it from back in the day when it wasn't easy to get through. And obviously it's a very different moment now. Culture is now ready to accept the power of black females in the creative circles, and she's deservedly getting some love for what she's been doing for way longer than most people. And to see it all brought together is a beautiful thing.
I'm proud. You know, some of the work has really stood the test of time. It's reached multiple age groups and audiences over decades now. Starting out as a photographer, that is something that I always wanted to kind of be able to do. You know, there was an undercurrent running theme with the exhibition. You know, if I was to think back and say, oh, I'm not too keen on this or that in my archive, I've experimented a lot with processes. So, you know, sometimes trying a certain process on a particular image didn't work, or a particular lighting didn't work. But it's who I am. It's a part of me, you know. And so I don't really have any regrets as such. You know, I see everything as a journey, as a learning point. You learn each stage. And when I was coming up, I just said to myself, you know, as long as I get a shot from each decade, if I can get a shot from each decade that people really resonate with and remember, because that's what some of the really big photographers that I know of, you know, one of my favourites is Albert Watson. So I wanted that. I also wanted to be able to also still be creative, because it's just a part of who I am.
You've been listening to The Process. Thanks to Jenny Baptiste, DJ Semtex, Jake Nava, and Wale Adeyemi. Narrated and produced by Tayo Papula, and presented by me, Laurent John. The exec producer is Eleanor Ritter Scott. The theme music is by Carr Beard, and the series is mixed by Mike Woolley. Be sure to catch Jenny's foundational exhibition, Rhythm and Roots, at Somerset House, open until January 2026. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.